Our fourth case for argument this morning is Sherwood against Marquette Transportation Company. Mr. Bowler.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent Marquette Transportation Company, the owner of the vessel in which Mr. Sherwood was employed, and I represent Bluegrass Marine, his actual employer, with respect to the injury that occurred in this case. This matter is before you based upon the district court's denial of our motion to compel arbitration and to state proceedings. The relevant facts are not in dispute. Number one, Mr. Sherwood knowingly and voluntarily executed an arbitration agreement as part of a dispute resolution agreement. Number two, his claims are within the scope of the agreement. Number three, Illinois law clearly applies to the claims. Those claims are arbitrable, and he agreed that Mr. Sherwood agreed that Illinois law would be applied. Number four, the district court correctly found that Illinois law permitted the parties to agree that the Illinois Uniform Arbitration Act would apply rather than the FAA. However, despite these uncontroverted facts, the district court determined sua sponte, ignoring the plaintiff's arguments opposing arbitration, that Section 1 of the FAA impliedly preempted the Illinois Uniform Arbitration Act and that the agreement was rendered unenforceable. The issue before this court is very simply.
Well, of course, we have to decide whether there's any issue before this court.
Yes,
first
Your Honor.
Question, and every appeal is appellate jurisdiction, so I hope you'll give us your views on that.
Yes, I will, Your Honor. We submit that very clearly under 9 U.S.C. Section 16A, this court has jurisdiction. Under 9 U.S.C. Section 16A, a court has jurisdiction.
Let me tell you the problem. Section 16 says that it applies to cases under this act, that is, under the Federal Arbitration Act. And I take it that it is undisputed that this is not a case under the Federal Arbitration Act. And why isn't that the end of Section 16?
Because otherwise, if 9 U.S.C. 16A were not read to encompass such appeals, there would never be an appeal.
No, certainly there would be. There just won't be an interlocutory appeal. The case will come to a final judgment, and on appeal from a final judgment, you can make the same argument you're making now.
Yes, Your Honor, but then, of course, the whole procedure for arbitration is rendered futile. Because as we all know, if you cannot perfect an interlocutory appeal and get a decision on your motion to compel arbitration, it is futile after there is a decision on the merits.
Why?
Because afterwards, the entire purpose.
The judge decides the case, and it's adverse to your position. You take an appeal from the final judgment and say, this was in the wrong forum. It's just like any forum selection clause. If you have a selection clause that says, this case will be litigated in Florida, and the district court litigates it in Illinois, nonetheless, you can't take an interlocutory appeal from that. But at the end of the case, you can say, the wrong court entered the decision. Please send it to Florida.
Your Honor, this would defeat the entire purpose of arbitration, a speedy, quick.
You would say it defeats the entire purpose of the forum selection clause, but it's perfectly plain that there's no interlocutory appeal in forum selection clause cases. In any event, I hope you will deal with the language of the statute. I asked you a question about the statute's language, which you did not address. Instead, you leapt to your conception of the statute's purpose. But we need to enforce the statute's language. So what's your argument based on the statute's language?
Well, of course, the district court actually does rely on the FAA and says that the FAA, in this case, applies to the exclusion of Illinois law. Second, under 28 U.S.C. Section 1291, I believe.
Are you going to make an argument based on the statute's language? That is, Section 16 has particular language in it. Right?
Yes.
It says, if I understand it correctly, well, I've just gotten it right here, right? It says, an appeal may be taken from an arbitration that is subject to this title, right? Now, the question is, does a contention that the Federal Arbitration Act preempts state law make this a case subject to this title? I think that would be the technical question.
Your Honor, applying the literal language of the statute, I believe it is subject to the title because the district court found that it is encompassed and covered by the FAA.
No. Yeah,
and
no, look, the language like that has to have some real referent. If you look at Section 16, there's a bunch of things. Maybe an appeal may be taken from any order refusing a stay of any action under Section 3. Doesn't come within that, okay? Denying a petition under Section 4 to order arbitration to proceed. You don't think we got a petition under Section 4. Denying an application under Section 206 of this title. There's no application under Section 206. Confirming or denying confirmation of the award, right? And then finally, an interlocutory order granting, continuing, or modifying an injunction against an arbitration that is subject to this title. District judge doesn't seem to have done that either. Certainly, there was no injunction against an arbitration that was subject to this title.
That's correct, Your Honor, but not granting, indeed, not granting a motion to stay, which, of course, was requested here,
no,
is
motion
itself considered
refusing a stay of any, quote, action under Section 3 of this title. Is this a, quote, action under Section 3 of this title? Because if you're dealing with the stay refusal clause, that's the key language.
I believe it is based upon the rationale stated by the Third Circuit in the Palco case.
Now, you could have asked the judge to certify an interlocutory appeal under Rule 54.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I would think there's probably a good chance the judge would have done that. But you didn't feel that was necessary.
No, Your Honor, based upon the, of course, case that is virtually identical on facts and law, that is the Third Circuit's opinion in Palco, which is based on yet on another Third Circuit.
You may be aware, but perhaps, counsel, you may be aware, obviously you're not, though, that the Second Circuit and the D.C. Circuit have both held there's no jurisdiction in cases like this.
No, I can't say that I am aware of that, Your Honor. That is not what our research had indicated to us. And, of course, this was not raised by the other side, as I recall reading the motion to dismiss the lack of jurisdiction. But we argued two other alternative bases for jurisdiction. And one was that this is, of course, an appealable under 28 U.S.C. Section 1291, and also under the collateral order doctrine, that if this matter is not properly before the court under the collateral order doctrine, it's an important matter collateral to the merits that would be never susceptible of review. Of course, that is, in terms of argument, similar to what the court found in Palco.
So you think an order rejecting a claim that a forum selection clause prefers one forum over another is immediately appealable? You know, the Supreme Court held out the other way, 9-0. That case, the Court of Appeals had relied on the collateral order doctrine, and the Supreme Court said, no, forum selection clause issues and forum nonconvenience issues are not appealable under the collateral order doctrine. The Supreme Court has also said, I think, very clearly, that arbitration clauses are forms of forum selection clauses.
Well, Your Honor, simply based upon the Palco decision, its reasoning, and, of course, our alternative bases for jurisdiction, as stated in our brief, it is our view that the court does have jurisdiction, or otherwise this issue would escape review. If a party said it's exempt under Section 1 of the FAA, and therefore, since it's exempt, it's not covered by the FAA, then going up on appeal, the case would never be subject to review. I believe I've saved 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Renshaw.
May it please the Court. It's our position that this Court does not have jurisdiction over this interlocutory appeal. The defendant clearly brought the case under the state, Illinois State Arbitration Act, and exclusively. So when the Court made its decision, it filed its appeal under the Federal Arbitration Act interlocutory appeal provision, but there was nothing in that provision that gave this Court jurisdiction. If it's saying now that it was relying on the Federal Act, well, clearly it has no case because there's a specific exemption for the seaman maritime worker. So there's simply no jurisdiction under this Act. The language of the Act is clear, specifically what it covers.
The question, although Mr. Mueller wasn't willing to make the argument, the technical question, I think, is whether there was some motion or proceeding under Section 3 of the Arbitration Act. Right? Is there or isn't there?
Is there a motion based on Federal Arbitration
based on
Act?
Section 3 of the Arbitration Act. That's the technical question. I think it boils down to that.
Okay. The Section 3 is the stay provision.
Yes, stay of proceedings, as the caption says, stay of proceedings where issue is referable to arbitration.
Yes, but that section only applies if you're relying on the Federal Act.
Well, that's the question.
Yeah.
I'm posing that question. Is that true about Section 3?
I think it's definitely
and
true.
Why?
Why? Because it does not purport to go beyond what the Act covers. I think it says subject to this title in that section, maybe not in A3.
No, that's actually, Section 3 doesn't say that. That's the peculiarity. The first sentence says, if any suit or proceeding be brought in any of the courts of the United States upon any issue referable to arbitration under an agreement in writing for such arbitration, the court, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that sounds like it's saying there has to be a stay whether or not this is within the Federal Arbitration Act.
But
maybe that's wrong. Is there some authority about the scope of Section 3?
I think that you can't look at that particular section in subsection in isolation. I think you have to look at the entire section which relates to the interlocutory appeal, and there is that provision subject to this Act. Mm-hmm. And I think that you cannot extend it to everything. Now, PALCO is quite different because PALCO involved state and federal.
So your understanding of the last phrase in Section 1 is that nothing herein contained means not only any special rules for arbitration, but any of the general clauses, like Section 3.
Right. And I don't – there's no authority to indicate that that's –
When you say no authority, do you mean I've searched and know that there is none, or do you mean
I haven't found any. I have searched, yes.
You've searched and found none.
That opposes my interpretation and the exact language of that whole section. So I think under that section, under the Federal Act interlocutory appeal section, this Court has no jurisdiction. And I won't read my argument. As for the collateral order, I think it's settled by the fact that forum selection clauses aren't appealable interlocutory under the collateral order. There's also no jurisdiction under 1292 because this is not an injunction. So that pretty much takes care of all the interlocutory appellate jurisdiction other than permissive, and they didn't seek a permissive appeal. So turning to the question, if you ever get to it, which I don't believe you should, But the question is, can the defendant avoid the exemption under the Federal Arbitration Act of maritime contracts of employment by saying, well, the state, we can go under the state law? And the trial court ruled, no, they can't. And the trial court ruled on the basis that the Federal Arbitration Act preempted the Illinois Act. We believe that the trial court was correct in this basis because what we're talking about is a substantive issue here. The exemption under the Federal Act clearly sets out no contracts of employment of maritime work, seamen are arbitratable. So by saying that, if you allow the state to take precedence over it, you're making that provision meaningless. And it's not merely a matter of procedure. It's a question of a substantive provision.
You lose me there. In what sense is the language meaningless? The language just knocks out the whole Federal Arbitration Act, right? It says this statute doesn't apply. What that means is that states are free to allow or disallow such arbitration according to what state policy is. I don't see how knocking out the federal statute knocks out state policy as well.
Well, it's tied in with the next issue of maritime law taking precedence, too. And the problem with saying, oh, the states can do whatever they want, you can't simply ignore what was the meaning of putting this provision into the Federal Act. Now, obviously, when you construe a statute, you look for the intent of Congress. And in Circuit City, the Supreme Court said the legislative history on this case is very scarce. So although they said, well, maybe it was because they had other legislation. Well, it also could be because they have a concern for the seaman's right to have his maintenance and cure and his Jones Act right to trial. So
I'm now completely lost.
Oh, no.
You're not saying, I hope, that all state law is automatically preempted in all maritime cases. The Saving to Suitors Clause preserves state law.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you have to look at it case by case here and what the issue is involved.
I don't think preemption is decided case by case.
But I'm saying what state laws are going to be accepted in conformance. I think you have to do the preemption analysis. And whether it's a question of conflict, and can you do both at the same time? Can you comply with the federal statute and the state statute at the same time? And in this case, you can't. Which leads to then the other question of, well, preemption of the maritime law over the state law. And although the trial court didn't consider it, it can be affirmed on any basis that's supported in the record. And it's pretty clear from the law that there is a substantive right in maritime cases to trial by jury in Jones Act and the and a right to maintenance and cure with
I don't think you want to pursue this. That's simply an argument that no arbitration clause ever is valid. That's what arbitration does. They waive rights to trial by jury. They waive rights to appear in particular courts. The line of argument you're taking now has been considered and rejected in this circuit too many times to count.
Well, as you say, I don't think I need to go there because I think we can rely strictly on what the court did, saying it preempted it federal over state. And if the court has no further questions, I would ask that the court affirm the trial court's denial of the stay motion.
I thought you wanted to dismiss the appeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I do. Yes. That would be exactly what I want to do. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Mueller?
Yes, Your Honors.
With respect to 9 U.S.C. Section 16, there really are no qualifications. It simply says an appeal may be taken from, A, refusing a stay of any action under Section 3 of this title. I believe we meet those requirements. Also,
how is this under Section 3 of this title when the last clause of Section 1 says, quote, nothing herein contained shall apply to contracts of employment of seamen? And one would think that Section 3 is part of the something herein, which is being said not to apply.
Because it, of course, arises under that very issue. And as the Palco case points out,
Look.
Interpretation.
Look, counsel, I could understand if we were having a dispute about what the scope of Section 1 is. That is, if there were a dispute about whether plaintiff actually is a seaman, then the doctrine that courts of appeals have jurisdiction to determine their own jurisdiction means that that dispute could be resolved. But my understanding is there's no dispute whatever that plaintiff is a seaman, and therefore that language applies. Is that correct?
Your Honor, he is a seaman. There's no question about that. But, of course, there are three bases we raise for jurisdiction, including 28 U.S.C. 1292A1. Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.